Chapter 6. Caldera, Lacolith. Smoke, fire, volcanic rock turned into a shrapnel whirlwind, crashing waves of Xenos muscle, blades, and rifle fire. The slope caught in a hurricane of war, directions becoming meaningless, the world disintegrating, reduced to the clamor of violent death. The Vox, a torrent from all the elements of the strike force.
Heavy weapons hitting us from the west! The east! The east! The east! Suppressive fire on those tanks! Pushing us back! Maintain formation or I'll shoot you myself! Consolidate Dune Crawler line! Lost! Close that gap by the throne! Close!
The screams of dying mortals, chattering binaric dissolving into feedback whines, the grim calm of battle brothers falling to sudden silence, the choir of disaster. The last wall closed ranks. The company became a ceramite barrier. Bolter shells and streams of flaming promethium slammed against the orcs, exploding and incinerating flesh. At the northernmost tip of the Imperial advance, Corrin's veterans held the orc infantry at bay.
"They will not pass, Chapter Master," Eternity promised. "It is we who must pass," Corrin said. "Artillery," he voxed, "sustained fire to the north. All other forces, protect the artillery. We must advance."
Their goal was almost in sight, beyond a few more ridges. But the upper slope was hidden by ceaseless explosions. The fury of the Imperial guns thinned the orc infantry. The small arms fire coming from the heights diminished. But the salvos of the orc cannons were unceasing. Greenskin heavy support from the east and west now bombarded the slopes. On the Imperial flanks, the orc infantry crashed against the Imperial forces. They broke the charge of the dragoons. Lumbering monsters in thick plate armor hurled their bulk against the legs of the iron striders. They toppled the steeds, then fell on the riders with power claws and kill saws, crushing metal, tearing flesh. Skitari could still bleed.
"Gunships," Corrin called. "We need those artillery placements taken out." "We are attacking," Hemisphere replied. "Their anti-aircraft fire is much stronger than we supposed. Two Xiphon interceptors and a Thunderhawk already lost."
Corrin cursed. He marched forwards into the roiling flames. Overhead, eradicator beams lanced at the enemy as the dune crawlers maneuvered through the Astra Militarum and Skitari infantry. The energy vanished into the maelstrom before him. The last wall's line advanced. The battle brothers on the flanks held back the rampage of the orc infantry. Faster than they died, the greenskins kept coming, wave after wave. They ran over their dead and stormed through the explosions. In the brute savagery of the charge, Corrin saw a dual threat. Beyond the sheer power of the massed attack, it was also the reason humanity underestimated the greenskins again and again. This way of war was barely beyond the animal. It was what he would have expected of a pack of Saurians. There was no way these savages could be capable of complex strategy. No way they could have outwitted and outfought and humiliated the Imperium again and again. No way they could have destroyed an entire chapter of the Adeptus Astartes. No way they could have trapped the strike force, not when he had already witnessed their capabilities, not when he knew better. The taste of failure was bitter. The taste of shame was ash. Corland swallowed them both. He gave himself to rage. He would not let the mission fail. He marched into the vortex. There was no other option. There was no other path open. No choice. He advanced as though will alone would defeat the reality before him. It was like walking on the surface of a sun. Solid ground was an illusion. Corland walked into eruption, into the kinetic fury of war embodied. He was that fury, too. He was the vengeance and the justice of the Imperial fists. He was the Emperor's war given flesh. He roared his challenge to the enemy. The storm of war answered him with its greater voice. It mocked him. It hurled him back. A cannon shell landed a few meters ahead. The blast knocked him to his knees. A volley followed, and everything before him vanished. The earth erupted and he was tumbling through the flame. He landed hard. He slammed his fist into the slope, punching through rock to arrest his slide. He stood. On either side, his battle brothers were recovering. They had been pushed back down the hillside. The storm marched down towards them, eating the slope, a volcano opening its jaws to swallow the last wall. Corlan's retinal lenses were a riot of death and warnings. They were a single message. The way forwards was barred to him. The stims coursed through Rodolph's bloodstream. They boosted his adrenaline. His eyes were clear. He could think. He'd taken several shots of painkillers, and his body was distant to him, its pain merely information transmitted through heavy interference. He stood, but he did not know how long that would be possible. He was leaning against the pulpit, his left hand still locked around the aquila, as if it had been soldered to the iron. His blood flowed from his palm. His breath rattled like stones in a canteen. His body was broken. He knew this. It would not last long.
"Admiral?"
the Medicae tried again.
"I'm not interested, Felt."
"Without treatment?"
"No time. Go be useful elsewhere. That's an order."
Plenty of wounded for Fell to tend. More all the time. Rodolph had tuned out the news of the finality's wounds and the casualties in the crew in the same way he had blocked the weakness of his body. All that mattered was the war outside. What mattered was what he and his cruiser could do. The finality and the absolute decree ploughed through the orc ships as through an ocean in full gale. The Imperial fleet was moving closer to the attack moon, but it was shedding ships. The two cruisers reinforced each other with their salvos. There was never a pause in the barrage, and the orcs could not get close enough to ram, but their torpedoes took a toll. And the escorts were dying. The orcs came at them in overwhelming numbers and picked them off one by one. The upper right of the oculus flared. Just beyond its view, something had died.
"The Protocol of Judgment is gone," said Groth.
Another of the Adeptus Mechanicus frigates. Half of the Martian fleet had been destroyed.
"Admiral," boxed Brumis on the absolute decree, "there's a gap in the enemy formations."
Rodolph looked at the tacticarium screens. He saw what had drawn Brumis's attention. Below the ecliptic and to starboard, only a single orc cruiser appeared. Rodolph exchanged a look with Groth.
"Too easy," she said,
but she had the oculus trained to that region. The green-skinned vessel had taken severe hits. Its bow was cratered. One of its engines was dead. It had been left behind by its escort, which was closing with the destroyer, Lord Commander Saladion. Beyond the orc cruiser was a clear run to the attack moon. Inviting. Three torpedoes shot through the defensive fire and struck the finality in the stern. Rodolph felt the impact vibrate through the deck and travel up his spine. His knees sagged. As the void shields flickered, teetering on the edge of cascading failure, his body reached out for him and tried to drag him down into the mire of its pain. He gritted his teeth. Groth was speaking. He forced himself to hear.
"Negative," she was saying to Brumis. "The enemy concentration around us is too great. We can't break through to that gap."
"I can."
The decree was running below the finality, while the bulk of the orc fleet had risen above it.
"We can make the run," Brumis said. "If you can hold them, we can smash that cruiser and reach the moon."
"The instant you try, the entire fleet will turn from us to you," Groth objected. "We're only holding our own because we're together. Divided, they'll finish us."
"We're finished anyway. What are we doing except delaying the inevitable by a short period? Our sacrifices will be in vain." "Captain Brumis,"
Rodolph said. Speech was difficult. His tongue was as distant from his command as the rest of his body. Did Groth notice the delay between his thoughts and his actions? He blinked the absurdity away. He dragged his palm over the aquila, pulling the wound open, jolting himself with another burst of pain. He would need more stims soon.
"Captain," he said again, "delay is the value of our sacrifice. The success of the mission will be decided on the surface of Keldera, not by what we do here. If we destroy the moon, we will be guaranteeing victory planetside."
"You'll never get close enough," said Groth. "The gravity weapon will tear you apart."
We're already closer than should be possible. All of the weapons' energies must be being used in the construction. The moon is vulnerable. Admiral, you must give the order.
I will do no such thing, you insubordinate fool, Rodolf thought. When Groth turned to stare at him, he realized he hadn't said the words. He said. His tongue was clumsy. It was too big. How could it fit into his mouth? His left hand went numb. He could no longer feel the pulpit. He looked down. He saw his fingers open. He willed them closed. They disobeyed. His hand fell to his side. His knees folded. He slumped forwards. The eagle's heads rushed to meet him. They cracked his skull. His vision filled with swarming dots of black. Was he still falling? No. The ship was shaking again. He was lying on the floor of the strategium. His ears were filled with lead, but he thought he heard Groth's voice. Yes, he did. She was bending over him. Her lips were moving. She was shouting, first at him, then at someone else. Who would she be talking to? Brumis? Yes, Brumis. Who was doing something foolish. Who must... The swarming black covered his eyes. Deal with Brumis later. Perhaps he would sleep. But it was so cold. Electronic shrieking. Those toxins again. Not as loud as they were. That was good. Easier to sleep. Sleep. Then he was awake, gasping. Adrenaline surging again. Fire racing up his left arm and through the back of his neck. His heart hammered at his ribcage. He sat up fast. His temples throbbed. Felt was kneeling beside him. He's back, the medicae said to Groth, but I can't give him another dose like that.
You'll dose me like that for as long as we have a ship, Rodolf snarled.
He took Groth's proffered hand and got to his feet. The picked screen to the left of the Aquila showed the dispositions of the fleet. The runes beside the representation of the Absolute Decree began to flash. The ship's orientation was changing.
Brumis! Rodolf yelled. Do not break formation! Your wounds are severe, Admiral. You are unable to articulate your orders a few moments ago. You have been incapacitated and are no longer able to command. By virtue of seniority, I am now the ranking officer in this fleet. I must take the actions that stand the best chance of leading to victory for the Imperium.
You're grandstanding, Brumis, said Groth. There's no glory to be had here.
Hold them off us, Captain. Those are your new orders. Keep their attention for as long as you can.
Don't be insane.
He won't listen,
Rodolf said quietly. The runes on the screen kept changing. The angle between the two grand cruisers was growing. The Absolute Decree was pointing her bow down towards the Orc vessel and the attack moon beyond.
No choice now, he told Groth. Do as Brumis says.
He was too exhausted to feel the rage that should be his.
Do what you can.
He moved to one side of the pulpit, making room for Groth. She stepped forwards.
Helm, she said, make for the primary cluster of ships at 15 degrees starboard. Weapon stations, concentrate fire on the lead cruiser.
The Vox clamoured for Rodolf's attention. It was Princeps IV Sindisi, commanding the Mechanicus ships.
Admiral Rodolf, we observe trajectory alterations. Please advise of tactical revisions.
This is Elia Groth, the captain answered.
I am speaking for the Admiral. The Absolute Decree is proceeding alone. Form up on the finality. Keep the enemy's focus on our positions.
Requesting elaboration, what is the purpose of the manoeuvre?
To hold off disaster as best we can, Princeps. Captain Brumis is proceeding against orders.
Clarification accepted. Requesting our negative estimation of the approach be noted.
Rodolf straightened. Groth let him lean forwards to answer.
Our estimation is the same.
He leaned against the pulpit once more. He winced as the shell and torpedo hits became more numerous as the Absolute Decree put distance between the cruisers, making them both more vulnerable.
Hull breach in Launch Bay Sigma,
Groth said.
I don't need to know, Rodolf gasped. When we die, we die.
He nodded at the oculus.
Show me what Brumis is doing.
The orientation of the view changed.
Most of the attacking ships vanished. The Absolute Decree appeared in the center of the Oculus, its engines flaring hot. Nearly 8,000 meters of War Leviathan turned away from the fleet, almost twice the size of the Orc cruiser coming to meet it. No other Orc vessels joined the duel, and the struggle was a brief one. The Decree's armament overwhelmed the Orc's guns and shield plating. Long before it could attempt to ram, the cruiser broke in half. Brumis kept up the barrage. The enemy ship disintegrated in a chain of plasma flares. The path to the attack moon was clear.
Was he right?
Rodolf wondered. He hadn't doubted his decisions until now, but Brumis had far more experience. Rodolf's strength was slipping away. Perhaps he was no longer fit to command.
No,
said Groth. She widened her stance, standing firm against the hammering jolts to the bridge.
He was wrong. He's getting through.
The enemy's mistake is too obvious.
The Absolute Decree moved towards the moon. It picked up speed. All its batteries trained their fire on the target. On the surface of the moon, bright flowers blossomed. Pinpricks.
Cyclonic torpedoes,
Rodolf muttered. As if Brumis had heard, two fateful streaks shot from the cruiser's bow. Rodolf held his breath. Now he hoped he and Groth were wrong. He hoped Brumis's disobedience would save them all. Groth was shaking her head.
Why not?
Rodolf asked. She pointed. Objects scattered throughout the near space of the moon glinted.
Orbital defences, Groth said.
A few moments later, a web of lasfire cut short the flight of the torpedoes. More pinpricks from the Decree's guns flickered on the surface of the moon, assaults so trivial they were ignored. Brumis boxed them again.
I have ordered ramming speed. In the name of the Emperor, we surrender our lives.
No, Groth called. That won't be enough to pierce the crust. Captain, turn around. It isn't too late.
The planet side face,
Rodolf said.
The incomplete portion of the moon. It might be vulnerable.
My thanks, Admiral, said Brumis.
When Groth looked at him, Rodolf said,
It is too late.
But perhaps there was a last chance to make Brumis's gambit work. The Absolute Decree accelerated. Its orientation changed again. Its bow began to turn towards Caldera, preparing for the swing around and into the target.
We can't even see that face,
Groth said.
We know what we can see is invulnerable. What else is left to try?
She remained unconvinced.
You believe the ship can maneuver through that?
She pointed at the huge masses of crust rising from Caldera. They were larger than the Decree.
What else is left?
Rodolf repeated. The finality was pummeled again. He heard a weapons officer confirm another Orc vessel destroyed. Rodolf was in the midst of an endgame battle, but his awareness shrank to the Oculus and the ponderous movements of the Grand Cruiser. Brumis had doomed them all. The war would end sooner because he had broken rank. All that mattered now was the tattered hope he had become. The Absolute Decree moved closer, reaching a lower orbit than the moon. Brumis was in position to make the run at the unfinished region.
Why is he not being attacked?
Groth asked. Rodolf's blood chilled. He would have liked to believe the space around the Decree was empty because the rest of the fleet had drawn the attention of all the enemy ships. But these Orcs did not make such monumental tactical errors. Not even the orbital defences were firing. Not a single shot. Only the moon, the Absolute Decree, and the void. And the mountains. The flying mountains.
No,
Rodolf whispered.
Why couldn't we see?
Groth said, agonized. She called to Brumis. She tried to warn him. Rodolf didn't hear what she said. For him, too, now, there was only the moon, the ship, the void, and the mountains. It was, he realized, not a question of Brumis having to avoid the terrible masses. The doom began in the form of a single pulse of light. A corona around the moon. The surface seemed to ripple, perception distorted by the intensity of the gravitic wave. An invisible hand grasped the rising chunk of Caldera. The rock was over 20 kilometers across, the size of a small planetoid. The grip whipped the mass away from the moon and into the path of the Absolute Decree. The cruiser's orientation shifted once more. The movement was slow, minute, futile. There would be no evasion. A mountain range smashed into the Absolute Decree. The cruiser shattered like glass, the fragments of its hull spread apart with awful grace, backlit by a billowing inferno. The warp drive erupted. Killing light filled the oculus, consuming the meteor. The shockwave travelled ahead of the hurtling fragments of ships and rock, washing over the fleets and moon. The Finality shuddered in the midst of Holocaust. Rodolphe saw the names of smaller ships vanish from the picked screen. After the light, darkness taking ally and foe alike. But there were still so many orcs. Even as ships collided with the wreckage of others, the armada kept attacking. The darkness reached into the bridge of the Finality. It wrapped its fist around Rodolph's head, squeezing, trying to force him into the night of despair and unconsciousness.
"Keep fighting,"
he whispered. He clutched the Aquila for strength. He clutched it for hope. All he felt was cold iron. Through the creeping dark of his pain, all he saw was the final approach of an enemy with the power of a god. She almost didn't see the battle wagon. A chance parting of the smoke, the luck of her glance to the east. The orc tank was some distance from her position. If not for the fires of burning vehicles, it would have been invisible in the falling night. But Imren saw it, and she saw the flash of its gun. Instinct said, down. She dropped through the hatch of the Chimera. A second later, the shell tore through the roof of the tank. It destroyed the turret. A burst of flame reached into the interior. Imren protected her head with her arms, and the sleeves of her uniform caught fire. She beat them out against the inner hull, blinked through pain and smoke. Her gunner was dead. The command table was shattered. But the Chimera was still moving.
"Nissen," she called out. "Tell me it's you driving."
"It is, General," Nissen shouted back from his compartment.
"Do you still have Vox capability?"
The equipment around her was ruined.
"I do." "Then you'll relay my orders. For now, keep going."
Imren grabbed the ragged edge of the roof and pulled herself up. She looked around at the state of the rout. The Imperial forces were in full retreat. They had abandoned any thought of advancing. They were racing for Lacolith and the hell of urban warfare. There was no advantage to be gained, no siege to prepare, only the flight and the play for time. This was wrong, all of it. She had come to Caldera to restore honour. She wished to repair the name of the Lucifer Blacks, guardian regiment of the heart of the Imperial Palace, battered by the Eldar incursion and the brazen arrival of the Orc ambassadors. Even more crucially, the pride of the Astra Militarum needed to be rebuilt after the disaster of the Proletarian Crusade. The mission to Caldera represented the first true hope for the Imperium since the start of the war. A false hope, it now seemed, an illusion of perfect cruelty. The orcs were invincible. She looked forwards. Lacolith was somewhere ahead in the dark. It had to be close, but there was no illumination in the city. She would have little notice of its proximity until she crossed the remnants of its wall. On all sides, the combined regiments raced through the shattered jungle. The retreat was a flight. The strategy was sound. The only course of action was to reach the urban battlefield ahead of the orcs, seize it, and use the terrain to slow the enemy down. But the sense of the tactic did nothing to mitigate the humiliation. All she saw was defeat, the combined forces of the Emperor running for their lives from a triumphant, mocking foe. The orcs pressed in on either flank. The Imperials were using the cleared swathe of the jungle. The greenskins had to smash their way through the trees and dense vegetation again in an effort to keep up. They were doing well, scorching the earth with flamers, splintering trunks with the siege shields of tanks and trucks. The jungle slowed them just enough. Imran thought the strike force would reach the city in time. "Our only success will be to run from a fight," she thought. Imran's Chimera had been at the front of the Astra Militarum ranks during the advance. She was towards the rear during the retreat. The greater mass of infantry and vehicles streamed ahead of her. In the distance, she caught glimpses of heavy, reptilian bodies flashing in headlamp beams.
"Nissan," she called. "What's happening at the front?"
After a pause, the driver answered,
"Saurian attacks, General. Packs of the beasts. They're hitting the infantry."
Caldera was turning on them, Imran thought. It was mocking their defeat. Streams from the great river of the Orc hordes stabbed into the ranks. The troops fought back, hitting the enemy with all the rage of savaged pride. The night around her was lit by streaks of Laz and tracer fire. Three orcs ran straight for the left side of the Chimera, grabbing the hull. The turret gone, Imren climbed up onto the rear portion of the roof, which had been spared the impact of the shell. She held onto a spike of twisted metal with her right hand and fired her plasma pistol into the upturned faces of the orcs. She returned their snarls with her own, her hate as brutal as their joy. She burned the head off one. As it fell, it knocked one of its fellows off the hull. Both disappeared under the treads. The third slashed at Imren with a machete. She reared back, lost her footing, and fell. Her pistol clattered into the troop compartment. She kept her grip on the spike. Its jagged edges cut through the leather of her gloves. Her boots struggled to find a hold on the side of the hull. The orc jumped on top of the Chimera. It crouched over her, grinning, its fetid breath making her eyes water. It raised the machete over its head. Imren pulled on the spike with all her strength. She bent her arm and hauled herself up, grabbed the greenskin's harness with her left hand, and dropped back. The sudden weight overbalanced the orc and it plunged forwards. The spike rammed through its eye and cracked out the back of its skull. Imren climbed up the corpse. She pulled the head off the spike and pushed the body off the Chimera. She stood on the roof, her breath coming in growling heaves, and looked out at the jungle and the cauldron of struggle and flight. She saw the broken towers of Lacolith emerge from the darkness. She filled her lungs with a torrid air, with a physaline and burnt flesh stench of defeat, with all her despair and rage. And she roared. The war answered back. There was no line to hold in Lacolith. There was no keeping the orcs out or forcing them back. There was only the hope of bogging them down. To break up the concentration of the horde and tangle them in the canyons of Rockcrete. A play for time, nothing more. It wasn't good enough. There was no end except a delay of extermination. Courland led the last wall down a narrow avenue. They had less than a minute's lead on the orcs. The artillery barrage of the city had already begun. A shell destroyed the upper portion of a hab on the right, the street filled with a cloud of powdered wall. Marching beside him, Eternity said,
"We can ambush them here." "We keep moving," said Corland. "We wait for word from Hemisphere."
The word came when the last wall was deep into the dust cloud, and Hemisphere gave Corland what he needed.
"Chapter Master," the pilot voxed, "I managed another pass towards the target position. A portion of the Orc army is still there." "Did you see what they're fighting?" "I couldn't get near. Most of their anti-air is concentrated near that position."
"They don't really want us to approach," Corran thought. He opened a channel to the other commanders.
"Our original target is still viable. The Orcs are using their full strength because they're desperate to prevent us from reaching it."
"They have been successful," said Arawa.
"They have also given us the opportunity to turn that success into failure. They are following us into Lacolith."
"How does that help?" Imran asked.
"We must hold their army here while a small force makes an aerial insertion up the slope."
Thane said,
"The Thunderhawks will await you at the spaceport."
"We've defeated these orcs before," Thane called to his company.
"We won on Idolica. Today, a delay is a victory."
The Fist's exemplar had taken the main avenue cutting through the center of Lacolith. It was the fastest route to the spaceport and the most inviting path for a large force. The Orc superheavies were most likely to take this route, so the avenue was the one most important to deny to the enemy.
"We don't know the Greenskins have any idea what Corland is attempting,"
Aquino had said as they set up the ambush.
"We don't," Thane had agreed. "Should we underestimate them yet again?"
Now Aloysian answered Thane's shout.
Let the delay begin, Chapter Master.
The Tech Marine had worked fast. Under his supervision, it had taken less than 5 minutes to plant the demolition charges. The greenskin horde thundered down the avenue, lured by the harassing attacks of the predators. The Adeptus Astartes tanks backed up, still firing, until they crossed the kill zone. On either side of the street, the foundations of Hablocks exploded. Already weakened by the initial fighting in Lacolith, the towers collapsed, falling towards each other. They came down on the front ranks of the orcs, crushing them beneath thousands of tons of rubble, filling the street with an avalanche of rockcrete and dust. The wall of wreckage was a dozen meters high. The assault squad landed on its peak and rained fire on the orcs below. The rest of the company attacked from the structures on either side, trapping the greenskins in a lethal dead end. Gunships flew low on the avenue, raking the enemy with cannons and heavy bolters, missiles tearing into the greenskin tanks. The orcs stopped. The infantry began to pull back.
Do they think we're stupid? Aquino voxed. Keep hitting them, said Thane, but keep a distance.
He would not lead his men into a counter-ambush.
Only the infantry is pulling back, Aloysian said. The heavy guns are moving forwards.
At the end of the avenue, a walker and three battle fortresses advanced. Before the infantry was fully clear, they opened up. The barrage was monstrous. The Fist's exemplar pulled back as the street erupted, explosions hammering the avenue from a point 50 meters forward of the company all the way to the barrier. Rockets slammed into the facades of the Habs, bringing more buildings down. The collapses forced the Fist's exemplar into the open. Taking to the shelter of the craters, they maintained their fire on the enemy, but Thane could no longer see what effect, if any, they were having. He was shooting into explosions.
Pull back to the other side of the barrier, Thane ordered. We'll welcome them again there. Gunships covering fire. Break this barrage.
Aloysian slid into the same crater as Thane.
They're concentrating their bombardment on the road.
It's working for them. They're making it hard for us to move. Let them amuse themselves. At least they're not advancing.
If this is victory, it has a displeasing shape.
Our victory conditions are the success of the mission.
The truth of the words made them no less bitter. Aloysian was right. At this moment, the idea of locating the Primarch felt abstract. Compounded humiliation was a reality. Aloysian's attention had shifted back to the Orcs' tactics.
Why the road? The enemy has done nothing without reason.
Thane looked behind. His battle brothers were climbing over the rubble.
Let's go, he said to Aloysian. If they have a reason, it will do them no good in our absence.
He made for the barrier, running through the barrage. On his left, Brasidas took a direct hit. The Space Marine vanished. The mist of his blood splashed against Thane's helm. The ground shook with impacts. Fissures spread from crater to crater. Too late, Thane realized what the orcs were doing. With a massive tremor and a howl of shattering rock, the avenue gave way. It fell into the honeycomb of lava tunnels below. Weakened by the pounding of the bombardment, the tunnels collapsed too. The chain reaction spread. A gorge opened up, running through the center of Lacolith. It swallowed the barrier. The ground vanished beneath Thane's feet. The Fist's exemplar plunged into the depths. Thane dropped 20 meters. He bounced off jagged ledges and landed on an uneven field of broken stone. The force of his fall punched through rock. He stood, servo motors in his armor, catching and whining. He looked up at the sheer walls surrounding the company. There was no sure route out. He heard the bombardment stop. The rumble of engines replaced the roar of guns. The orcs were closing in on the trap they had created. The company drew together. Thane made for the tanks, but the fall had disabled the heavy armor. The tanks were immobilized. Even if they could maneuver, none could be extracted from the gorge except by airlift. However, not all of the vehicles had been wholly destroyed in the fall. Some, at least, still had working guns.
Tactical squads, Thane voxed. Get to street level. Do what you can. Gunships, concentrate on the super heavies. Hold them off. Destroy them if possible.
He turned to his brothers.
We can fight or we can climb. Is that a choice? Gehagnis asked.
Not really. Unless they climbed, annihilation was inevitable. He climbed on top of the nearest functioning turret. It belonged to the Predator, Scion of Roma.
Let enough of us remain with the tanks to hold the enemy at bay. The rest of you make for the far wall. Reach the top, then cover our retreat.
His brothers wrapped their fists against their chest plates in salute and left. There were 5 guns that could be used.
Venerable brother Otho stayed as well. The dreadnought could not climb, so he became the mobile artillery.
The whirlwind Citadel's End could still move, and Aloysian took its controls with Scuris operating its rocket launcher. The bulk of the company retreated. The rear of the canyon was 500 meters to the south. The collapse was deep, narrow, and less than a kilometer long in total.
We are in a barrel,
Aloysian boxed.
I know it, Thane replied. The orcs moved their superheavies into position. The walker arrived first. It towered over the lip of the canyon, its squat, conical shape having none of the majesty of the Titans. It was power embodied in its most brutal, savage form. In the excess of its massive cannon and the cluster of turrets, they nonetheless saw a mocking kind of genius. The behemoth was the orc spirit of war, crushing feet, crushing limbs, and crushing weaponry. Thane looked up from the perspective of the Imperium trampled beneath the boots of the greenskins. Hatred fueled his first shot. The Predator's shell exploded against the walker's armor. The hit would have reduced battlements to powder. A crater smoked in the orc machine's carapace. The beast's cannon arm swung downwards as if the blow had meant nothing. The gun barrel was as long as a rhino. The shot was like a meteor impact. The shell struck the ground just ahead of Scion of Roma, and the explosion lifted the front of the tank up, flipping the Predator onto its roof. Thane leapt from the turret in mid-arc. He landed and scrambled out of the way of its fall. Thunderhawks and Xiphon interceptors strafed the orc machines. Secondary turrets on the walker retaliated, while the primary arms remained pointed down. The massive totemic head, its eyes lit crimson, appeared to gaze into the canyon, unperturbed by the aerial assaults. Imperial autocannon fire took out smaller tanks. The battle fortresses and the walker maintained their positions and the steady bombardment. Dense clusters of anti-aircraft fire reached for the gunships. Scuris unleashed the whirlwind's battery of rockets, enveloping the head of the walker in flame. Its next shot went wild. As pulverized rock rained down on him, Thane pounded over the floor of the canyon. He jumped on top of Citadel's End as Aloysian drove forwards. The Tech Marine headed for the cliff nearest the orcs, below the range of the walker's cannon. Battle fortresses and the smaller battle wagons arrived at the lip of the gorge. Infantry set up mortar positions, and a deluge of fire fell upon the Fist's exemplar. The canyon became the boiling crater of a volcano. Identification runes flashed red and then black in Thane's retinal lenses. More brothers dying. A double explosion to the rear was another tank blown up by direct hit from the walker's huge cannon.
Brother Aquino, what is your progress? Thane boxed.
At the head of the battle brothers climbing the south wall, Aquino said,
Halfway there, Chapter Master. They haven't...
Thunder and static howl cut him off. Electrical arcs fired across the gorge, stabbing at the vertical face. Thane heard the rumble of further rockfalls. Another rune blinked and died. Citadel's End fired again, but this time Aloysian targeted the top of the cliff instead of the orc machines. He created his own avalanche. The walker rocked forwards as the ground fell away, but its operators moved one of its huge legs in a great dragging step backwards, and it staggered away from the edge. One of the battle fortresses wasn't fast enough. It pitched down, engine screaming, tread spinning uselessly as it fell. It turned on its side, then into a ponderous roll, hauled by its own tremendous mass. It fired again in mid-flight. The shell hit the cliff wall just above Citadel's End. Aloysian reversed, jouncing the whirlwind off boulders, and a cloud of dust billowed over the tank. Thane left the roof. He ran through the dust to the darker mass of the battle fortress. It had landed upright. The treads were destroyed, and its wheels threw up sparks as they tried to find traction on rubble, but its three-layered turrets rotated southwards. They roared. Thane stared straight ahead. He refused to acknowledge further losses. He would not permit them. Behind him, Citadel's End fired again, eating at the ground of the Orc positions, forcing them back. An energy gun exploded, filling the night with an emerald glare. Thane pulled a melter bomb from his belt and ducked beneath the lowest cannon, scrambled over the spiked cylinder the fortress used as a siege shield, and climbed its hull. Firing his bolt pistol through a viewing slit, he was rewarded with a whining snarl of pain. He slapped the melter bomb to the top cannon, the largest, where the barrel met the turret. Then he jumped to the ground in front of the tank, daring the greenskins to take their anger out on a single enemy. They took the bait. The melter bomb flared, then ate through the turret and barrel. The gun fired, and the battle fortress self-immolated. Molten heat reached for Thane, burning chunks of hull spun past him. This was a much better shape of victory. He turned back towards Citadel's End. Even as he did, the orcs settled into new positions and hit the canyon with another massive salvo.
Aquino!
He shouted. No answer. He called again. Aquino answered, his voice tight with suppressed pain.
They're blasting the cliff away from us, Chapter Master. Progress is slow. We are taking losses.
I have faith in you, brother. But he didn't in the situation. The orcs were bringing forwards even more mortars, even more large guns. The foot soldiers lined the circumference of the gorge, shouting with laughter. Thane only saw them in glimpses between the eruptions and the flames. They were celebrants, exulting over the pyre of their foe. Thane would fight, Aloysian would fight, Aquino and the others would fight, and they would die. The Vox scratched for his attention, a transmission on the wider command network. He caught up to the whirlwind once more and opened the channel.
Tai Nora 7 Galliax, a mechanical voice said. We are approaching your position, Chapter Master Thane.
Your news is welcome, Princeps.
Our maneuver is thanks to yours, Chapter Master. The principal strength of the Veridi Giganticus was drawn to you. The pressure on us was relieved. We come to return the favour.
She spoke, and then new light tore the night. Blinding phosphor blasts illuminated the orc positions and burned the infantry. The perfect razor yellow of eradicator beams cut in from east and west, burning through the flanks of the enemy armour. Two battle wagons disintegrated. Their blasts took out the energy cannons nearby. The destruction spread.
All guns, target the clifftop, Thane ordered.
Citadel's End, Brother Otho, and the immobilized predators fired within seconds of each other. Concussive hammer blows tore a huge chunk of the ground away. The new avalanche stole the road surface from beneath the orcs. The battle fortresses ceased fire as they reversed course, backing over the retreating infantry. The walker took another step back. This time it was too slow. The surface of the road collapsed beneath it. The walker plunged headfirst, firing one more time as it dropped. The wild shell punched another crater behind Thane. The canyon roared and echoed as the Leviathan's fall triggered another avalanche of rock and gravel. The monster came to a stop at the base of the canyon, half buried by the slide. Its cannon arm was immobile. The left arm waved its gigantic saw. The blade buzzed in the air, hungry for targets. The body shook with internal explosions, but still lived.
"Finish it!" Thane ordered.
The guns of the Fist's exemplar lowered their aim. They fired as one, a choir of rage and vengeance. They targeted the head, which protruded well beyond the rockfall. The walker's armor could not withstand such a concentrated assault, and the head blew apart. The devastated neck opened into an abyss of darkness and monstrous engineering. An inferno billowed out of the chasm as the machinery tore itself apart. The walker shook harder and harder as something vital and tremendously powerful was breached. Thane took cover behind a boulder. The monster's death shattered the night of the gorge, killing the dark with burning day. It pulverized the rock that had buried the walker. Stone shards flew across the canyon with hurricane velocity. They whined over Thane's position like a swarm of insects. Thane rose when the glow of the blast faded. Still more of the cliff face had collapsed. There was a slope now to the north. Too steep for Citadel's End, but not perhaps for the Dreadnought.
"Venerable Brother Otho," Thane called. "I am with you, Chapter Master."
Aloysian and the other battle brothers, who had manned the guns, left the vehicles. Together with Thane, they mounted the slope. When they reached the top, they found the rest of the company already engaged. In the midst of the broken city, the Fist's exemplar hammered the front ranks of the orcs, while the Mechanicus attacked the flanks. The orcs pulled back, infantry falling, vehicles destroyed. The battle fortresses were more powerful than any single one of the Imperial vehicles deployed on Caldera, but they were not invulnerable. A line of Cataphron breachers closed with the fortress on the eastern side of the avenue. Their torsion cannons turned the matter of its armor against itself, three simultaneous hits tearing its flank open. Brother Scavola launched a rocket through the gap. The battle fortress died, fire pouring from the viewing slits of its turrets. The command network was a cacophony of voices. The heaviest orc force was before Thane, but the army was so massive it was fighting across the city. There was desperation in the communications from the Astra Militarum. The mortals were fighting, building to building. They were being taken apart. "They are still serving," Thane told himself. "They are slowing the enemy." And here, now, in this sector of Lacolith, the orcs were losing ground. This was no feigned retreat. The orcs raged. They hurled themselves at the Imperials, but it was their turn to find themselves in the kill zone. The street hampered the movement of their massed numbers. The fire from in front, from the sides and above, broke each wave of assault. Thane saw a real victory taking form. And then the form changed, dissolved, became terrible. At the far end of the avenue, orc reinforcements arrived. More battle fortresses. Two walkers. The earth shook with their approach.